Today's podcast episode is on mindful IVF with Lucy Lines, fertility educator and embryologist. Let's dive in and chat mindful IVF and preparation with Lucy.
Welcome to the Her Earth Medicine podcast, Lucy.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm excited to chat to you because a little bit of a different angle as to the guests I've had on prior to today. So I wanted to maybe start off by having you share a little bit about yourself. You're an embryologist. I'd love to hear a little bit about that before we kind of go into the IVF side of things. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you became an embryologist and what that actually looks like?
Sure. So the long story is a chapter in a book that's a very long story, but the short story is that I studied a Bachelor of Agricultural Science and I majored in animal breeding and genetics. I then did a 12-month course, or one-year course, called a Postgraduate Diploma of Reproductive Science. And during that time, I volunteered in a research lab doing mouse IVF. And the lady who was running that lab had a friend who was the manager of the IVF group at Monash IVF, the embryology team at Monash IVF, and she put me forward for a job. So when I started as an embryologist, I didn't even really know entirely what an embryologist was, but the learning is all on the job anyway. The training is all on the job. So that was back in the year 2000. That's a really long time ago now. And I think the face of embryology has really changed since then. But back then, IVF was not for profit. That's kind of how I landed in IVF as an embryologist.
So what are you doing in the labs as an embryologist?
So the embryologist is the one who's behind the scenes. Usually these days you don't even get to meet them when you have a cycle of IVF, but they're the ones who manage the sperm, the eggs. They do the ICSI, which is the intracytoplasmic sperm injection. They put the sperm and the eggs together. They watch those embryos grow. So they're making culture dishes, they're dealing with incubators and microscopes and all of that sciencey stuff behind the scenes to put together the sperm and the eggs, make the embryos, choose the embryos, freeze them, thaw them, all that kind of stuff.
Wow, that would be amazing to watch.
It is really cool. It is the most rewarding job I've ever held in my life.
Yeah, I've had a little look and seen some of your photos that you've posted about fertilized eggs, and it's so interesting to just see those pictures.
It is. So, yeah, really cool.
Check it out. And can you tell us a little bit about what actually IVF, what's the process with IVF? What is it for someone that might be new to it, thinking about it? Run us through what happens.
So really simplified, basically what we do is we get eggs, we get sperm, we put them together, we make embryos, we watch them grow, and we choose one to put back. Obviously, it's a whole lot more in depth than that, To put a little bit more depth into it, we collect eggs through an ultrasound-guided vaginal probe with a needle on the end of it that goes up through the top of your vagina, collects the eggs from your ovaries, and then we take those eggs into the lab and fertilize them with the sperm and watch them grow for a couple of days. The process of IVF usually takes from beginning to end, one cycle usually takes somewhere between 6 or 8 weeks. By the time you start your injections 2 weeks before your egg collection, then you wait for 2 weeks after your embryo transfer before you do your pregnancy test. So it's usually 6 weeks or so from end to end.
6 weeks, okay.
Roughly.
And where would you run us through what you're doing now? So what is your kind of title you've given yourself at the moment and what you're
doing? I've recently stumbled upon the idea that I am now your embryologist in your pocket. I've been doing independent fertility guidance and support for coming up 5 years now. And I started out calling myself a fertility doula, but in the medical space at the time, 5 years ago, doulas had a bit of a weird kind of reputation. These days they're much more acceptable, but back then it was sort of a bit of a funny sort of space. So I dropped that very quickly and I went to fertility coach. But these days there's a lot of fertility coaches out there who are really good at what they do, and that's not what I do. I'm more about helping people understand what's actually happening in their fertility from a science and an embryologist perspective, really, as compared to someone who's coaching you through you know, what you can do. So I moved away from that. And now these days I call myself a fertility educator or embryologist in your pocket. Basically giving you the information that we probably should have got at school to help you understand your body and get your general knowledge up to a certain level, that then means you feel confident, safe, empowered to ask the questions of your medical professionals, and take control of your fertility yourself.
Okay, great. And so let's just say somebody is looking into IVF, potentially they've been trying to conceive for the 12 months. What do they do? Where do they start? Can you give us some guidance there?
Start with me. No, I mean, most people will go to their GP, and a lot of people will go to their GP after maybe 3 or 4 months of trying because they feel like everyone's getting pregnant and they're the only ones who aren't. And depending on who your GP is and what their information base is with regard to fertility, they may say, oh, everything's fine, go away and keep trying. They may, I had someone DM me just this morning saying they went to their GP on Saturday and their GP actually said to them, alcohol and holidays is really good for making babies, so go on a holiday. That just makes me so sad because there's so much that we can do without IVF. You know, we don't have to go straight to IVF. There's a whole lot in the middle. So what should they do? Start with your GP. If you don't get any good answers from your GP, try to find someone like me. It might be a naturopath. It might be a Chinese medicine practitioner. It might be another GP, a different GP who specialises in women's health. Get the information about your body. Try to arm yourself with knowledge about how conception is supposed to work. So there is a free little video that I've got called Who and When to Ask for Help on my website that you can go and grab, and that one gives you a bit of an idea about when you should start asking for help and who you should ask and what kinds of questions you should look for.
Okay, and so what kind of education would you give to someone, say it's only been that kind of maybe 4 or 5 months picture, then they're going to their GP, where would you start with them?
Well, I'd start with trying to help them to understand their cycles, so work out where their fertile window really sits, because that's something that a lot of people missed out at school. At school, in sex ed, we all learned how to put condoms on bananas, and that was about it. And probably we actually need to learn a whole lot more about how our cycles work, what the bleeding phase is, what all the different phases are and how they all fit together. So I'd start with that. I'd move on to helping them work out how to protect their hormones from endocrine disrupting chemicals. It's a huge thing that I talk about all the time. And I think it's never too early to learn that stuff. We should be teaching that stuff to 12-year-olds or mothers of 4-year-olds, or absolutely everybody should know that stuff. So that's kind of where I'd begin, and then sort of hand them, handhold them through all of that stuff until we get to a point where we're ready to seek medical intervention.
Okay. So let's just say they've reached out, they've done some work with you for a few more months. They've still maybe now they're reaching that 12-month sort of picture. They're going, yeah, I want to do IVF. I mean, usually I think women get a little bit more impatient than that. They might seek it a little bit earlier. But they're saying, okay, I'm ready for IVF. Now what? What's a preparation we should be looking at for women in particular? Let's focus there in terms of maybe egg quality, the timeline of egg quality and all those sort of things.
So if they've been working with me for a couple of months, they'd already know that it takes 3 months roughly for an egg to mature. So from recruitment through to when that egg's ready to ovulate, and there's a couple of blogs about this on my website, but it takes about 3 months for that egg to mature in that cohort of eggs that are growing up. So preparation for any conception, whether it's natural conception or IVF or IUI or one of the other options in between of intervention, those 3 months of preparation prior to that conception, however the conception happens, is really important for not just for the conception, but also for the health of the pregnancy and the health of the baby. And if you think, you know, we're born with all the eggs we'll ever have. So if you imagine that you're starting a pregnancy today with a baby girl, when that baby girl is born, she's got half of your grandchildren in her already. So preparing yourself for 3 months before her conception is also your gift to the next generation as well, because then hopefully the way you manage your pregnancy will have an impact on, if it's a girl, her ability to conceive herself. So, you know, there's a whole lot of research around maternal BPA exposure. So BPA is an endocrine disrupting chemical. If mums who are pregnant with female fetuses are exposed to high levels of BPA, or even low levels of BPA, but BPA in general, those daughters go through puberty 6 months earlier than their counterparts. So it's a whole lifetime thing. And so preparation for conception is key, whether it's natural conception, or I mean, even IUI and IVF are still natural conception. We don't make them conceive. We put eggs and sperm together, and they do their thing. Some do, some don't. That's still nature. So even if you're having conception, or if the conception is with assistance, it's still really important to do those 3 months of preparation. And it's not just for the eggs either. It takes 12 months for sperm to grow, to make a sperm. It takes, 3 months. Blah, 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 I said 12, yeah. I meant three. Yeah. It takes 3 months for a sperm to create a sperm, to make a sperm in the sperm-making factory. And so I think that's really quite naturally coincidental. Eggs and sperm both take about 3 months to mature and develop and grow. So that preparation prior to any conception is really important.
So is it with the 3 months? Because what I always tell my patients is that 90-day cycle to get the healthy eggs or the sperm. But then obviously anything thereafter is going to be the healthiest stuff. So I always say it might be just a little bit more than 3 months, because smack bang on 3 months, that's when they start being produced really well. So I always say it's that little bit of time, maybe a couple of weeks after to get that.
I'm probably a little bit more general than that. I say this recruitment and growth of these cohort of eggs is a rolling thing. You don't start today on the 7th of February making eggs for 3 months' time. It's a rolling thing. So if you're ovulating today on whatever day today is, 3 months ago, the egg that you ovulated today started to grow.
Yeah. So,
and in that 3 months, we have an opportunity to have an impact on the resilience and health of that egg. Not the quality. We can't change the DNA in the egg, but we can change how resilient and how healthy and capable that egg is of carrying on. So yes, that's today's ovulation started 3 months ago, but next month's ovulation started 2 months ago, and 3 months time ovulation started, or 2 months time ovulation started a month ago. So any changes you make today will have some impact on next month's ovulation, a little bit more impact on 2 months time ovulation, and the most impact on 3 months time ovulation.
Yes. So okay.
I like to look at it in that sort of rolling way. When it comes to sperm, guys are just constantly making sperm. So if you make lifestyle changes today, that's going to have minimal impact on what you're producing tomorrow, a little bit more impact on what you're producing in a month's time, but the most impact on what you're producing in 3 months' time. So it's not like a set time point of 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. It's a rolling thing that any lifestyle changes you make are going to have an impact on everything that happens from now on, and they're going to have the most impact in about 3 months' time.
Okay, great. Yeah. So that's what I was getting at, is in 4 months' time, they're all going to be great.
Well, yes and no, as long as you're not, you know, they're going to be better than they are now. And, you know, I think women have a tendency, women in particular, have a tendency to blame themselves when stuff doesn't work. And so, you know, we're raised to review what happened in any procedure, whether it's an essay that you're handing in grade five, or a, you know, house build that you're organising, whatever it is that you're doing, you get 80% of it right. We're encouraged, we're raised, we're conditioned to go back over the preparation for whatever that thing was and work out what went wrong. Mm-hmm. And then we blame ourselves. And when it comes to fertility, we go, right, well, I didn't conceive, so let's look back at what happened and try and work out what went wrong. When it's not black and white, it's not an exact science. It's not, there is no list that you can tick everything and say in 3 months' time I'm going to have perfect eggs, because you might have a massive mental health issue because you've had to cut out, you know, you've been led to believe that you need to cut out something in your life that you actually really love and gives you lots of great endorphins, and then your life's kind of screwed. Which is why if people are taking their health advice from random websites on the internet, they're going to cobble together a really mismatched idea of what they need to do. And then when if it doesn't work, they're going to turn around and beat themselves up and say it was something that they did wrong because they didn't follow X random person on the internet's amazing advice. So I say find someone that you love and you trust and you believe in and follow what they say such that it fits your life and your lifestyle, because there is no prescription, there is no 100% checkbox that's going to give you perfect eggs or perfect sperm. It's just the changes that suit your life and that fit into your lifestyle that will give you the best opportunity.
Okay. And so what are some of the things that you would advise females for egg quality?
See, this is what my clients pay me for.
Okay.
But yeah, you know, there's general. there's lots of different things that make a difference to how those sperm grow. Now, I'm not a dietitian, I'm not a naturopath, I'm not going to prescribe anything for you, but I am going to give you some ideas about questions that you can ask your medical professionals. I'm going to certainly empower you to feel like you know what you need rather than being given a whole lot of stuff that you don't understand and just taking it randomly and blindly believing whoever it is that you've decided that you're going to, you know, get to guide you. So feeling strong enough to understand what's being suggested for you and having someone by your side that you can say, hang on a minute, they've said this, why? And I can then say, oh, well, they've said that because X, Y, and Z, and yes, that's a great idea. Or, that sounds a little dodgy to me, maybe not.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe ask some more questions.
What sort of, like, mental preparation do you try and get, especially women, because I feel like they're the ones that cop the most stress? What are some of the things that they, you know, that you work with your women around IVF cycles to do?
So I've actually collaborated with a fertility hypnotherapist for the Mindful IVF program. So that's the real, that is the intensive hand-holding through an IVF cycle program that I have, and that's using my sort of life skills, if you like, and my own experience of being behind the scenes in an IVF clinic, and then my multiple miscarriages and time to conceive and all my sort of reproductive time. So that life experience combined with a certified hypnotherapist's guidance and information around mindfulness practices, meditation, self-hypnosis, all of that stuff that can really feather in and dovetail in really nicely to all of that information. So I think the first really important key if you're facing IVF is to arm yourself with knowledge and know what you've got coming, so that when you're faced with, you know, when you're in those consultations or when you're starting to go through the treatment cycle, everything feels a bit familiar. It's not overwhelming. You're sort of like, yeah, okay, I kind of know what's going on here. So arm yourself with the knowledge, and then arm yourself, prepare the eggs and the sperm the best you possibly can. So, you know, like we talked about before, and then practice some stress management techniques and mindfulness techniques and things that are going to help you manage when things get tough, because they're going to.
Okay, and so what do you recommend for the blokes? Let's just go back a step even prior to the IVF. So we spoke a little bit about the women. You know, they might be trying a couple months and they go to their GP. Is there some things you might educate the men with before they look at going into the IVF cycle? And then where do you start with them?
Yeah, look, I really encourage the guys to come to the consults. Often it's just the girls to start with, and I say, is your partner there? Is he going to come? You know, he should definitely listen to this. I find the biggest stumbling block with the guys is actually the toxins and fertility stuff, the endocrine disrupting chemicals, because they're just like, oh, whatever, that's too hard, you know, hippies or whatever. So I find that actually quite good fun. I'm a country girl, and I, you know, brother, and you know, I find that bit quite good fun, chatting to the guys about some of that stuff and explaining to them about the science behind the toxin stuff. It's not just all hippie woo. It's actually, there's actually quite a bit of science behind it, and it's a good idea. So as far as the guys are concerned, my first client was actually before I started Two Lines Fertility, but I was doing it sort of on the side, was a guy. And I didn't even meet his wife until she was 6 months pregnant with their twins. So, and he would ring me and say, I don't understand why she's so upset. I don't get it. It was nothing. And so I was trying to help him explain what she was going through, which then helped her to cope, because she had that safe space to get really upset, and he would just listen and then come to me and go, what the hell? Go back to her and go, okay, so I get it now, sort of, and she didn't have to explain all that. So, yeah, look, I love looking after the guys as well. I think it's really good fun.
Yeah, there's so much that can be done. I mean, we know about DNA fragmentations and just it doesn't, I mean, I find as a naturopath and TCM practitioner that men are easy to treat. It's the women that are usually more complex, and we don't have the men come. I worked a lot with fertility in Bangkok. I worked over there for 4 years, and the men would come over there, but in Australia they never come. Tradesmen, no, they just don't. But you just send them with some herbs and a few things, and get a really good response. But is there anything particularly that you think in terms of like sperm quality, generalized things? Let's not go into the stuff obviously that you, like you said, your patients pay you for, but alcohol, smoking, environment, you know, diet, where do you think it all fits in?
Yeah, look, all of that stuff is important to a certain extent. I've spent a long time living in Sweden, and the fertility rates in Sweden go up and down, up and down, up and down, and it's in total correlation to the seasons. Now, that could be because of, I don't know, any number of things in the seasons. They might eat differently in the summer and the winter. They might, it might be a natural animalistic thing. You know, animals seem to reproduce in the spring because it's easier to have babies in the spring and the summer and whatever. But we believed when I was working there, and we traced it back to this heated seats that they're all sitting on all winter, heating up their testes. Now, your testes hang outside your body for a reason. They want to be cooler. That's why they're there. And so keeping your testes really hot, I think, is a bad idea. Diet, lifestyle, all that kind of stuff that you you guys deal with, the naturopaths deal with. For me, and what I deal with the guys is mostly just encouraging them to go and get that help and support. Being overweight is not great for your fertility. So go and see a dietitian and get that support. Go and see an exercise physiologist and do something about it. Just pulling it all together and encouraging people to see the different modalities that they need to, rather than just like relying on one.
Yeah, great. Interesting. I'd love to hear what, so it was winter that they didn't produce. Is that what you're saying in Sweden?
Sperm counts are much lower in winter.
I mean, it fits into the kind of Chinese medicine cycle of things too. There's a lot of stillness happening before the spring, where everything comes out, goes into the liver energy a bit more, and everything starts, you know, movement. Same with nature as well.
Yeah,
very interesting. Okay, awesome. So, what if someone has done multiple rounds of IVF, and let's just say they've done, you know, some people have done 10 rounds and they've had fail cycles, or they've maybe conceived, had some miscarriages in there, and then just no full conception just yet.
Yeah.
Do these kind of people come to you? Where do you start with them? You get them to take a break, go on a holiday, you know?
Look, the first thing I like to do is I tend to attract to myself and to my practice A-type personalities. They want answers. They've got dot points. They've got checklists. They want lists. They want, you know, that's the kind of person that I seem to attract. And so the first thing I like to do with those people is say, okay, let's just pause what's happened so far, and let's actually reflect on what we've got. So I want to see your semen analysis reports. If there hasn't been one in the last 6 months, I want to see another one. I want to see your embryology reports. Now, these might, they're not just the letter that you get saying you got 3 embryos frozen and not that. I want you to actually call the clinic and ask for your embryology reports. And I want to go through them with you. I want to go step by step through how many eggs were collected, how many were mature, how many fertilized, what did they look like on day 3, what did they look like on day 5, and try and break down some of that embryology information. And then often in that, we'll find something that we can do moving forward. So, and it might be that we go, well, this is all just a bit shit, because you have actually, you know, I can't see anything that's going wrong there. So then the next thing we need to do is something completely different. So maybe we need to, you know, depending on the woman's age or whatever, take a break and go and do some hypnotherapy for a while, maybe. I don't know, that's really left field for me as a scientist, but maybe that's what you need to do. Because one of the foundations to Two Lines Fertility is that I want to look further than next month. I want to look further than Christmas. I want to think about when you're 60, and fertility is not your every waking thought anymore, and your opportunity to be a parent is finished. I want you, when you're there, to be able to look back at the preceding 20 years or however many years it is and be comfortable with the decisions you made. And you might do that with 2 children, 3 children, no children, adopted children, surrogate children, adopted embryos that you carried, donor eggs, donor sperm children, 5 dogs, a tarantula breeding program, who knows. But I want you to be able to look back at that time and go, yep, I did everything I could and I'm really comfortable with where I am now. And part of that is helping people to understand what they've been through already and then work out what they're capable of doing next. And it's okay to say no more. You know, it's totally okay to go, you know what, I'm done. I've had enough, but I can't actually put it down until I've understood what happened.
Yeah, I really like that. I think that's really important for some people, especially if they have done years of it, multiple cycles, and then yes.
And I need to understand. And then I help, you know, those people who have decided that it's enough and some, you know, that's okay too. For those people, I help them step out of their identity as an infertile. So we tend to take being infertile on as a part of our identity. And if you have made the decision to step away from trying to become a parent and it hasn't worked for you, then you need to be able to step out of that identity as an infertile too. So, and that can be a really hard thing to do. You know, there's lots of people on Instagram who have given up their own opportunity of becoming a mother but are still very much involved in the community. And that might be what's right for them, you know, but it's not going to be right for everyone. So I like to talk people through some of that process as well. You know, what do you see the next 5 years looking like? If you are going to give up on this, is that actually it, or are you just going to stop? Give up's the wrong terminology. I didn't mean to use that. But if you're going to stop treatment, what does that look like for you, and how are you going to cope with that, and who are you going to involve in that process to help you move on?
That's valuable information, I think.
Mm.
Very golden. Can I ask about the age of the women and the men you work with?
They vary. I had someone the other day who was 23, and I've got a couple of girls in my program who are 43, 44. So, and you know, they want to do IVF and then that's what they're ready for. And, you know, it's really hard for me because on the one hand, as a scientist, I know that conceiving naturally at 43 is virtually unheard of. It happens. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but you shouldn't pin all your hopes on it because your chances are very, very low. On the other hand, I conceived naturally at 43. So, you know, it's kind of hard to preach that to people and say, you know, I don't know whether it's worth still spending $10,000 a cycle on IVF at 43 or 44, because I think the statistics tell us that that is a very expensive horse in a race. You know, if it was a horse race, you would not put $5 on it, let alone $10,000. But it's obviously not a horse in a race. So, you know, there's a lot of conversation around that stuff. You asked before, Sandy, about the people who've done multiple cycles of IVF and what sort of guidance and support I give those people. Oftentimes those people were sort of bundled into IVF at the beginning, and then they're being thrown all these different things and all these different drugs, and, you know, they've got to a desperation point where their doctors are trying absolutely everything. But often what's been missed is that step back and the preparation.
Mm.
So the 3 months before a cycle preparation. So I've actually had probably 4 clients in the last month that has been the exact situation. And I've said, rightio, it's January now. This is obviously in the last month. It's January now. You're not doing another cycle until May. And between now and May, these are the things I want you to do. And May's not that far away, but if we're still working towards it, we're just not going to keep bombarding your body with all this other crap. We're just going to step back for a minute, and then we're going to go into the next one with fresh eyes and a fresh heart and a fresh soul and feeling, you know, brighter about it all. And if it still doesn't work, then at least you'll be able to look back and go, I did everything I could, and I, you know, feel comfortable with whatever my next step's going to be.
Mm. And I find a big majority of those kind of patients may end up conceiving naturally in that time anyway when they do the preparation.
It depends a lot on their reason for infertility. Quite often it does happen.
Okay, so can I ask you a little bit about, I like that you talk about the reproductive future and how to protect it. Can we maybe chat a little bit about that? So maybe we are talking to the girls in the 20s, even the men if they're listening, but mostly we women. What are some of the things, and that, I guess, that timeline like you gave before, that people can do to protect their reproductive future?
So a little sideline of mine is my passion project, Future Fertility Safe. And in Future Fertility Safe, I love to talk to young girls especially, but I think guys should be involved in the process as well. Mm-hmm. And by young girls, I mean 15 to 25-year-olds. They're a really hard group to talk to about anything. They're in their risk-taking years. They're in their I'm invincible years. They're in their, you know, they don't even think beyond what's happening on Friday night, let alone what might happen in 30 years' time, which is why I love to talk to them, because I think they're fascinating creatures, you know, people in that age group. But I like to talk to them about the things that they're doing now that are impacting their chances of being a parent in the future. And that's one group that I love to talk to, and I talk to them all about understanding their bodies and using their menstrual cycle as a superpower, and tapping into their really productive times in their cycle, recognizing that there are times in their cycle when they're actually going to feel like shit, and that's totally okay. They're not depressed. They don't need medication. They don't need to, you know, any of that other stuff. And really encouraging them to love on their bodies rather than hate their bodies. And that speaks a lot to their future fertility, mostly in, I've just got a message on my phone and it plinged on my computer, made my brain go, ping, what's that? The way that sort of self-talk and understanding your cycle and knowing your body stuff impacts your future fertility is that you understand how it's supposed to work. So you might be more inclined to ask for help when it feels like it's not working early, and be able to go through those processes early rather than this princess generation that I grew up in, where we always just believed that one day we would meet our prince and we would get married and have babies, and that was, we could put that off for as long as we wanted because IVF, we would just have IVF. And so I like to help people understand that nobody just does IVF, and that understanding your body and how it works is a 100% superpower. In conjunction with that work, so the 15 to 25-year-olds, I also love to talk to mums of little people. So mostly this is and dads and carers and grandparents and whoever's looking after these little people, but mostly that's women who've struggled to conceive themselves and they now have their baby and they're thinking, you know, how can I help to make sure my child doesn't go through what I went through? Mm. So I had myself personally 5 or 6 miscarriages. I kind of lost count and got very disconnected with my body and whatever. That's a long story. But I look at my daughter who's 11 now, she's turning 12 in a couple of months. She's got all the hormones and all the, you know, she's going through all that bit. And I look at her and I think, what can I do to help you not to have to go through what I went through. And so she laughs, that she gets pissed off at me all the time because I send her to school, you know, she's not allowed to have plastic wrapped food and all that crap that comes in bags and bags and bags of processed crap. And she's got to take her lunch to school in a stainless steel lunchbox and have a glass water bottle. And she's like, Mum, it's so embarrassing. I'm like, well, sorry, find something later. Else. Yeah, one day you might thank me. And you know, my son, who's four, he's currently building the factories that he will later rely on for sperm production. Now, between the ages of 4 and 8, that's when that's happening. So I need to make sure that his hormones that are governing that entire building of those factories are as unaffected, if that's right, but I want to say unregulated, but I want them to be regulated, I don't want them to be disrupted by anything he's eating or drinking or, you know, really, really hot baths. You know, my husband loves a really hot bath. I'm like, you can't do that for our son because that's going to impact his building of these factories. So I don't know if you've seen Shanna Swan's book called Countdown. Have you seen that?
No.
Countdown. I'm going to get it off my shelf. Hang on a sec. Now, Shanna Swan believes that by the year 2045, sperm counts will be so low that everyone will need assistance to reproduce.
Wow.
And she said how our modern world is threatening sperm counts, altering male and female reproductive development and imperiling the future of the human race. Terrifying book that was all through the news 6 or 8 months ago. I think they were trying to make us stop thinking about COVID. But plastics and chemicals and windows of vulnerability, you know, what ages are the hormones really at their most functional, and when's that window of vulnerability, and how can we protect our kids during that time? And some of that stuff just blows my mind. You know, how the reproductive hormones go throughout their lives and what we can do about it. So, you know, that's a bit of a passion project for me. That doesn't pay my mortgage. It doesn't help me pay school fees or anything like that. It's just something that I'm really passionate about because I think we can really change it. And, you know, when I'm walking through the supermarket, I look at people's trolleys and I think, oh, my God, people still eat that crap? Like, yeah. Yes, they do. And that's why I need to be out there pushing this more and more and more because it's, you know.
Well, I love passion projects. I'm always up for any charitable work. If you ever need a hand from, you know, what I can offer, I'd love to do that. I did that over in Thailand. I would go and educate some of the young women in the schools there.
Yep.
Thai women are most, you know, when it's unrefined and untouched by the Western world, the diet there is so beautiful, but then we've come with sugar and plastics. Like, you want to talk about plastics? Go live in Bangkok where they're putting hot soup into a plastic bag full of sugar and then everything, and their faces are full of acne and all their cycles are irregular because they've all got PCOS. And and I'm like, oh, my gosh, like, there's so much you can do here.
Yep. And you know, I read that maternal exposure to BPA can impact that child, particularly it's a daughter, her chances of developing PCOS and endometriosis later in life.
Yeah.
Early childhood exposure to plastics and chemicals can also influence PCOS and endometriosis. Even reproductive years, you cut out the endocrine disrupting chemicals or significantly reduce your exposure to them. You can't cut them out, but significantly reduce your exposure, and you can improve so many of the symptoms of PCOS and endometriosis just by doing that. So, you know, there's a lot in that, and it's something that I am very passionate about.
I mean, this is a little bit of a theory of mine. There's absolutely no scientific evidence to back this up, but there's a lot of lady boys in Thailand, and I think there's a massive association with their hormones all being mucked up from those endocrine disruptors. So, you know, and there's a lot of soy products that are, they're not good quality soy. They're obviously the processed soy and then the heating and everything like that. And I was like, well, I wonder if there's a little bit of a relationship between how their hormones are developing and, you know, coming out as. But yeah, very interesting. And I think we need to plug you into all the schools to get you educating. Now we have these webinars and Zoom. I think it should be a lot more accessible. It should be in all the high schools. All these women should be getting taught that if this does happen, like you were saying, going to your GP might not necessarily be the answer, because there's only really one outcome he's going to give you, and it's going to be the oral contraceptive pill, and there's other options.
Well, it might not be. I mean, there are some amazing GPs out there. I have a GP who goes to the Metagenics conferences whenever she possibly can and gives me information about, you know, I'm at the other end of that hormonal stuff. I'm menopausal now, and so I'm getting a whole lot of guidance and support from her about how diet and lifestyle can impact my menopause symptoms. And that's a GP. She's a Western medicine GP. There are some amazing GPs out there who can combine the Western medicine with some more alternative or adjunct, I like to see it, adjunct therapies that we can put hand in hand with Western medicine, because it doesn't have to be an either or. And that's kind of what I talk about with Two Lines of Fertility as well. It's not GP fertility specialist IVF. It's GP, Chinese medicine doctor, dietitian, exercise physiologist. Let's bring it all together and make it all work, and you're much more likely to get a successful outcome.
Well, that's it. You just want to find, I guess, a GP that's open. And if they are going to Metagenics, they're probably an integrative GP. There's also a bigger expense to sometimes going to see them. But I guess majority of the time, you know, a lot of young women that I know, they just get popped on the pill. But there is other options. And if their GP is open to giving them that education, then that is so good. And hopefully, you know, as more and more comes out around the microbiome, endocrine disruptors, GPs will go down that avenue, because obviously the pill isn't the answer for everything.
And you know, the pill can be the answer. The pill's been used for a really long time with, okay, yes, one could argue side effects, you know, we can talk about that, but the incidence of ovarian cancer in women who've been on the pill for longer versus women who have not is significantly different. You know, the pill protects you from some cancers. The pill is not as bad as a lot of people want to make it out to be, but it's also not the golden holy grail either. So it's about asking the questions of your GP, you know, and that's part of what I do with the mums and the carers of the little people, is when your little person gets to needing something like that and they're saying their periods are painful or whatever, just because you didn't have painful periods doesn't mean they can't. And make sure you ask the questions on their behalf. You know, is the pill really the right answer for my 14-year-old who hasn't finished developing yet? Are there some other options? What other options could I investigate at the same time? The other stuff I do with those parents and carers of little people is encourage them to be really open about their own menstrual cycles. You know, don't lock the door and hide your period. Be proud of what your body does, and talk to your kids about it. You know, my girl, as I said before, she's going to be 12 next month, but the house we lived in when she was two or three didn't have a lockable door on the bathroom. So at 2 and 3 years old, you know, Mummy, you're bleeding. Yes, that's because I'm not pregnant this month. Age-appropriate answers, and on you go. And so then periods are not something I have to sit down and teach her about. She's just always known about them.
Oh, yeah, my four-year-old son knows what a period is.
My four-year-old son doesn't, because I don't have them anymore. So he's not going to have any idea, and I really wish he did. So soon his sister's going to have them, and she's really unencumbered about her body, and she happily walks around the house, not around the house, but, you know, she'll shower with him still and all of that. And long may that continue, that body love and comfort and safety in her own body.
But that's it. It's about just educating what is natural, what we should look for, you know, what's our options if we need to go down that avenue at the young age, you know, even younger than high school, before they get the periods, teaching, like you said, those things that are going to act on their future reproductive health, because there's so much that can be done. So it's really great that you're out there doing that work and sharing that message.
I'm trying. I'm hoping to have more time to dedicate to it this year. But on my website there is a masterclass called Protecting the Future Fertility of Your Kids, which I probably just about due to re-record and put onto a different platform, but it's still there. So Protecting the Future Fertility of Your Kids for little people, and then the middle age one is not available as a webinar yet, but I'm working on it. So that's all. And then toxins and fertility is another one that I've got for people who are actively trying to conceive.
Yeah, so I was about to ask that. What's some of the other platforms you've got, courses and whatnot, that other people that are trying to conceive or going into IVF can look out for on your website?
So I said before, the who and when to ask for help. If you sign up to my email, you get that as a freebie. So that's a 15-minute video about who and when to ask for help, quite simply. Why Aren't We Pregnant Yet is a two-part series that's on my website. It's about 2 hours of me talking and helping you to understand some of the reasons why you might not be conceiving as quickly as you'd hoped. So that covers all, the first one of those is Fertility 101, all the stuff you should have learned at school, understanding your fertility. And the second part of that is exploring your options. So what options are available to you? What do they mean? And which pathway might you take? So that's those. And then my big signature program, Mindful IVF, which is a hand-holding through IVF program, basically. That's a collaboration with a fertility hypnotherapist, and I go through all the science of an IVF cycle, what actually happens, what can you expect, and what's going to go on behind the scenes. And Tanya goes through all the mindfulness tools and tricks and techniques that you can use. We've just closed the doors on that, but the doors on that open roughly every 3 months or so, and they're open for a month or so before you go into the next one. So that's the main stuff. And then I do one-on-one consultations and bundles, so people can chat to me one-on-one and we can go through their individual situations much more tailored, and I can answer all their questions.
That's a like beautiful combination of sort of the yin and the yang with the hypnotherapist and then the scientist.
Beautiful
background.
It's such, is such a beautiful program, and we're so proud of it. It took us over 12 months to build it and make sure that it's got all the right stuff in it. So it's got videos and audios you can download and have on your phone and listen to in the car or sit in the waiting room or whatever, just short little audio tracks. It's got PDFs, it's got workbooks, it's got all sorts. It's great.
I now understand the work that goes into writing a course. I'm almost finished one, but yes, so much behind the scenes. So there are sounds like there's a lot of valuable information in there for those couples trying to conceive or going into IVF. So where can the listeners find this information? Where do they go to search for you?
Come and find me on my website at www.twolinesfertility.com.au. I've got the AU on the end there so that you know that you're definitely speaking with a fellow Aussie. Alternatively, I hang out most on Instagram, so that's at twolinesfertility, and I spend far too much time there.
Great. Thank you so much, Lucy, for coming and chatting all things, I guess, mindful IVF preparation and, I guess, future reproductive health and how that can be supported, because I think that's so important. Great message there. So, I just want to say a big thank you for coming on and sharing your time. It's
my pleasure.
Great thank information you. That you're sharing.
Thank you so much for having me. It was good fun.
Thank you for listening. I have been a practitioner of naturopathic and Chinese medicine for over a decade. I have a master's degree of health science and I am an academic lecturer at Australia's leading natural medicine college. I am available worldwide online for bookings. Simply go to sandyrosshealth.com.